Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hi, welcome to this episode of the Cathedral Podcast. And we want to talk about something so foundational to all of life, which is when we begin life, who are the people who look after us? How do they go about it? Do they do a dandy job or do they watch it? Yes, we are talking about parenting. And I'm very glad to have Dr. Eliza Lianding here with me. Hi, Eliza.
Hi.
Yes, Eliza, you spent your childhood years in Malaysia. And then, of course, you went all the way across the globe and received your training as a counseling psychologist in the US. You have taught at several of our Bible colleges, and currently you work part-time at Carl Psychological and Counseling Services because you are a full-time mom. So I'm going to throw that first question to you. Everyone agrees that parenting is important. Exactly how important and how defining it is it?
Jenny, that's a good question. As you say, we are all here because two people came together to give us life. And whatever happens, these two people are important in really unquantifiable ways. We know that in the earliest of days, no child survives without a caregiver. The human child, if you think about it, is the most dependent and vulnerable of all of God's creatures. Mm. If you leave a child alone, he dies. Mm. There's just no way the baby can thrive. Whereas an animal pretty much gets up and, you know, starts trotting and looks for its milk or whatever. But the child has to learn how to trust during those early developmental years based on our consistency and the quality of care in, you know, the first experiences of the world. Mm. So a parent's attunement really matters. Think about what this means. If I cry as a baby and someone picks me up, then I learn that I have agency. I can affect the world. Someone is there to comfort me, feed me, clean and soothe me. So I know that I'm not alone. The earliest of days are really for building trust. So if you ask how important it is, well, that's really foundational, isn't it? If we don't learn to trust each other, there's just no relationship and there's no going forward in anything. So that's just so pivotal.
That's a very interesting angle to take, because most of the times when we think about infancy especially, we just think, oh, well, you just need to feed, clean, but the baby, you know. But you're talking now about something happening at the emotional, psychosocial level that is actually very foundational, and that is trust. And it's right. I mean, our world, no matter how mechanistic we go about things or how utilitarian, we can't run away from that. I mean, without trust, nothing happens in our world, right? Yeah. People need to trust one another. I need to trust that you will, you know, fulfill my order. I need to trust that you mean what you say, and so on and so on. So trust is very fundamental to how life operates. That's very interesting. So then what happens when that trust is not established?
Okay, if a child doesn't learn to trust a caregiver, then the child learns that, oh, I'm kind of on my own in this world. No one's really going to pay attention to me. I'm kind of invisible. And sometimes children can kind of turn inward. They have no vocabulary for their own experiences. They have no words to talk about, to even understand themselves and what they are feeling, what they're experiencing. So the real value of the parent being present is that you understand the child's early environment and you can help put language to the child's experience. So if a child has a certain expression and you say, oh, are you hungry now? Then the child learns, oh, okay, this kind of feeling is called hunger. Or, you know, if I get crabby and I start crying and my mom holds me and she says, all right, I think you're sleepy now, and begins to soothe me, then I know, okay, I'm just tired. I just need to go to sleep. So then I have a way of being soothed, and I know that I can, this kind of unpleasant emotion can pass. So that's the real kind of contribution of the early caregiver.
Great. So on that note, will you say that there are some key features of parenting that will be considered healthy?
Yeah, I think a healthy parent is a parent who has some level of awareness of him or herself. Because if you don't understand what's going on with yourself, sometimes it's very hard to help the child label his or her experience, isn't it? That I'm just kind of acting out of my own frustration and I'm not able to contain your experience. So I think a healthy parent has to have some level of awareness, and that comes with being open to feedback. We have to be able to see ourselves honestly and be able to take in other people's information to help us be better parents. So I think a healthy parent is one that is open to learning, always able to say, okay, tell me more, help me understand more. Just to realize that the child's experience can be very different from yours. Just because you try very hard to be a good parent doesn't mean that the child gets all of that goodness. You know, it could be overwhelming to the child. Children are very interesting creatures. They have a way of signaling to you when it's too much. They need some level of stimulation, and then they need their downtime.
Right.
And if we're not kind of reading them, we can actually overstimulate them. We can, So I think pacing with your child is very important, and you can pace with your child if you know your child.
Wow. That's very fascinating, because it sounds to me like there is this value also of attentiveness, that you are relating to a dynamic being that is growing and developing, and you need to have a level of attentiveness to what is happening, and not like, I have got this beautiful parenting plan, we'll do this, we'll do that, you will be this way, you'll be that way. Literally sort of like have a plan but not have a plan, right?
Yeah, it's good to know what you're all about. It's good to know what your goals are. And I think that, you know, it's very important for us as believers and as Christians to know that we are under God's authority and that we lean on God as we do our parenting. In fact, I have my own personal frustrations as a parent as well. And in my prayers, I often hear God say, partner with me. He is primary and I am secondary. And I'm just to partner him, and I'm to kind of keep my pace with him. And as I learn to love him with all my heart, my soul, my mind, and my strength, then I am in a better position to help my child know God and to love God. So it really does begin with ourselves and taking care of ourselves.
That's great. Well, but you know, right now we have this phenomenon in society called the nuclear family, right? Which is just a dad or mom, or in some instances, if that breaks apart for some reason, then you even have the single parent. Based on what you've described so far, do you think just a dad and a mom, not to mention the single parent or any other caregiver like a grandparent or that, do you think we are adequate to the task, or do you think maybe that you know, it should happen in some other way? Like, you know, they popularly say it takes a village to raise a child.
And I think there's a lot of truth in that, because it takes a village to raise a parent.
That's a very good point.
We're
growing with our kids, right?
We are growing with our kids, and we are changing with our kids. And I agree with you that I think the nuclear family is very limited. I do understand that the first experience for the child is importantly between a mom and dad, isn't it? The most amount of attentiveness and the presence between mom and dad. But mom and dad also need a lot of support. Mom and dad need a lot of confidence building, feedback. And I think it was my experience, being far away from my extended family that made me feel so, so isolated. I reached out through email and through whatever means I could. And those are okay, but there's nothing like, you know, another person present with you to help you, to show you, to comfort you, to encourage you. So for many of us moms, we are missing our aunts, our grandmas, our moms being there to help us. And in the end, the child also needs relationships apart from just parents. The child also needs other adults in their environment. So right. this extended family actually is a very rich network of relationships that support the same values and that will kind of help reinforce what the parent is trying to do. So yes, I agree with you. I think nuclear families can be very, very isolated. Mm. And you can feel very alone in your efforts. I think we are very poor if we don't have those extended relationships that we can lean on and draw from.
Yeah. And the nuclear family is very much a modern development, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the industrialization and the rise of cities and all that. But on the other hand, though, I mean, there are many couples who would rather not have their extended family, not even their parents involved with the children, citing differences in values and stuff like that. So there's this tension. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give them in light of the fact that the child may, and as well as the parents, may actually benefit from a wider tribe of people and a broader base of love? So what can we do with this real tension, real struggle some younger Christian couples especially may have if they feel like their parents or their extended family will not share their values?
Okay. I think your relationship with your child is very important to build that base of strength, right? So that their primary source of values is their own parents. So once the child has that very, very strong base, then allowing other people to be involved in the caregiving, if there are differences, I think if we are present to protect our children, that's very important. For example, suppose your child has a grandparent who maybe favors one gender and puts down the daughter because grandpa feels grandsons are more important or whatever it is. I think if you are around to kind of reinforce your point of view, which is to say, no, all babies are beautiful and all children are precious. And, you might want to say, even contradict the grandparent, but in the sense that you are allowing the child to understand your primary value is there, will always be there. Yeah, grandpa has his own thoughts and his own ways, but I want you to know you are precious to me and nothing changes that. And let that primary sense of security come from you. So I don't think we want to be fearful and kind of isolate our children because they're going to get all kinds of feedback from all kinds of sources. And they have to learn to judge for themselves what opinions to absorb and how to handle differences in different perspectives.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, eventually we have to prepare them to be able to navigate the world in its many contradictions and contractions and difficulties. Yeah. And what about parenting that could get unhealthy? Are there some warning signs or are there some indicators that, as parents, they could be aware of that, actually my parenting style or my parenting approach might be verging on something that's not very healthy for me and definitely not for my child. Are there some indicators?
Yeah. Our families are shrinking in size, right? I mean, people are having fewer kids. One of the things that I think is not terribly good, after saying, that we actually need nuclear families, sometimes I see one child with two parents and four grandparents. And
I have seen that in a pool. There's one child in a pool in a float and there are six adults. Two taking videos, two taking photos. I don't even know what's going on.
So very, very precious child. So it's going to be tricky to help the child understand that, the world doesn't revolve around you. Mm. You are precious to us, but only to us. The rest of the world, no one's going to treat you the same way. No one's going to idolize you. And so I think we have to help our children understand that while we value them, they have a place in this world and their place in this world is as contributors. They are here to be to participate in stewardship of the world, and they have a responsibility towards everyone else. So it's not just be a consumer and be kind of cared for always, but also do the caregiving in return. So I think that balance is very important.
That's very interesting, isn't it? How we practically in one generation tipped over to this other end. of fawning over our kids. To the degree that we hear, you know, stories like parents writing letters to their university profs to argue for grades and stuff like that. It's just such a strange development.
Yeah, you know, in one generation. Then the child doesn't, you're right, and then the child doesn't learn to fend for himself or herself or stand on their own two feet. And that doesn't help the child in the long run.
Mm.
The other thing that I do see that isn't very helpful is kind of the opposite of that, where one parent leans on the child for support as opposed to the spouse. So this is what we call a parentalized child, where the child becomes kind of the pseudo parent because you are your parent's partner as opposed to just your child. So that places a lot of burdens on the child because the child is forced to grow up very fast. The child doesn't get to experience their childhood. And so I think we really need to learn to lean on our own spouse and to help the child be a child and not lean on the child for adult responsibilities or companionship or decision-making. Kids are not ready for that.
Right.
They shouldn't be required to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, a very painful scenario is when a marriage is falling apart and the parents are asking the child to take sides, you know, which parent do you prefer? And so on and so forth. I think that's just traumatizing for the child. Yeah.
It's
so important.
Yes.
We should learn to lean on God and maybe even lean on, like you say, other support systems. I mean, because invariably in every marriage, there will be differences in parenting and all that. And as you're ironing that out, you still need some emotional support, right? So yeah, I think that's very important. The tendency to even lean on a child when they are very young, I've seen that happen too. Yeah, that's true. So those are two eminent dangers: helicoptering and fawning and idolizing our kids, and on the other hand, sort of using them on almost to be like a crutch to us emotionally when we have needs. Any others?
Yeah, I would say that a third kind, which is actually, you may not realize it, but actually some children are actually quite terrorized by their own parents, especially if the parent has a form of addiction or is an alcoholic or is kind of unstable themselves. So these children really, you know, they need protection, they need routine, they need some affirmation because no one's really helping them to deal with their own emotions when you have a parent that is frightful or unpredictable. So yes, nice. That kind of parenting is very hard on a child to grow up with, being afraid of the person that they should be trusting.
Wow. And that reminds me also of parental anger. Would that be another concern?
You know, how we deal with our anger is very important because anger is such a normal emotion. It's a normal emotion for the child to experience also. So how we manage our own emotions can actually be a model for the child. Being aware, of our own vulnerabilities and having an outlet, giving ourselves timeouts as parents, you know, and getting ourselves out of the situation or telling the kid, okay, you stay in your room for a while, mom needs to cool down, or let me go, you know, go swim my laps and then I'll be a better parent to you, or I just need to go get something to eat, give me a few minutes or whatever it is. So giving yourself a timeout, I think, so that you get some space to cool down and to self-regulate, puts you in a better position to deal with the child's behavior or whatever it is.
That's good. So, you know, as a trained psychologist, you have like encountered all these theories and all these systems and all these philosophical frameworks. I'm just a little curious, as a Christian, does any particular one of these resonate with you more than the others because of the Christian view of life and personhood that you hold?
There are really, you know, a great number of theories out there, probably one for every practitioner there. But one that rings well with me is the attachment theory that began with a psychiatrist named John Bowlby and then his student Mary Ainsworth, who kind of observed children and watched how children thrived in relationship to their early caregivers. So they observed the way the attachments were formed between the child and the caregiver, and then saw there was a certain pattern, you know, what happens to someone when they have a secure attachment. So like, say, a child who grows up secure can look to the parent for security and then can explore their world. Because you are there and I know you're always there for me, I can grow, I can thrive, I can flourish. If I'm not secure that you're there for me, I'm afraid. I'm afraid to move away from you. I'm afraid I might lose you. And this kind of insecurity means that the child is less likely to flourish, less likely to explore, less likely to, you know, be encouraged to grow as a person because of that deep insecurity. So I would say, yeah, that one is something that I operate from when I think about how to help parents, how to help parents understand their kids and what their kids need. Because it involves what you mentioned earlier, the word is attunement, right? How in tune is a parent to the child? If the parent is attuned to the child's needs, the child understands that, okay, there's predictability in this world, and I can get my needs met in this world because someone is attuned to me, someone understands me.
Right. And that is, yeah, as you are mentioning that, I just think back to our theology about how we have a Heavenly Father and we have a God who has made all these promises that He supplies our needs. He knows the number of hair on our heads. That is attunement, you know, from God to us.
And, absolutely.
Yeah, and so as parents, we offer our children sort of their first glimpse of who God is when we are attuned to them. The way our Heavenly Father is attuned to us, right?
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
I like the attachment thing too. Yeah. Right. It's really amazing.
Yeah. When kids don't have a strong and secure relationship with their caregiver, very often we find that that same thing transfers to their spiritual relationships also, because you begin to see God in the same unpredictable way. You know, and there's plenty of unpredictableness in our lives already. So if I'm not a secure person and I don't have a secure relationship as I grow up, then I begin to see God as someone I cannot trust as well. Or God's not always going to be there for me, or He's not going to be, doesn't really have my back. He's not going to watch out for me. So we find that there is that kind of a parallel relationship when our early caregivers are not present and predictable. We tend to kind of see God the same way too, that He's also the same kind of unpredictable authority figure.
And in which case, then therefore, if you have had parents who terrorize you, or parents who are neglectful, who are distant, or harsh, so we project our first experiences of authority figures to the ultimate authority figure, which is God. And therefore, we kind of think that that is, you know, we have this image wrongfully of God then. And that can be a real hindrance to our overall development, starting from our spiritual development. That's really harmful. Huh? Yeah. But, you know, I think all of us become parents without knowing what to do. And particularly, I think if we grew up and did not have positive relationships with our parents, that seems to me then to set up some really unique challenges. What are some things that these couples or parents already can do when they're in this situation? You know, they can't think about their relationship with their parents in a very positive light. Or maybe it's still ongoing, you know, the parents are still draconian or whatever. And it's just this difficult boulder, this big rock in their life. What can they do?
Okay. You know, That's really interesting. If we are all going to be stuck because of imperfect parenting, then all of us are indeed stuck, isn't it? Because none of us have perfect parents and none of us can ever be perfect parents. So all our children are doomed, isn't it? if we go from that point of view. But, you know, that is where faith comes in, isn't it? Faith is this amazing opportunity to say in spite of the fact that I have these fears, I have these insecurities. It doesn't mean that I cannot lean in and I cannot try, I cannot take that risk and find that God is there for me. So I think the gospel itself is so, so powerful because the deal is done. Christ came, Christ died, Christ has risen, Christ promises to return, and we know that if his first coming was sure, then his second coming is indeed sure. So that kind of eternal security, I think there's just nothing like it. I think we have to turn our children's eyes back on God and to say, yeah, you know, mom's love is imperfect. I make so many mistakes. I have to keep asking you for forgiveness. And but you know, you have a God who perfectly understands you. You have a God who has given his son for your life and has promised to carry us all the way. And so he is your constant companion. And so I think our great comfort is the fact that we can point our children to God. And that's where our faith comes in. If we haven't got that kind of faith, then I think it's very hard to point our children to the God that we don't trust.
Right.
So it is a challenge for ourselves that if we can put our faith in God, then we can help our children find faith in God as well. And that's where the repair is. It's kind of relearning how to trust. And for many of us, that trust relationship is practiced in our marriage as well. So that, you know, if we can exercise trust in our marriage, we can exercise trust in relationships, then our children also get to see how does this work out in real life? How does this human relationships work out? And so, so our own trustworthiness, our own faithfulness as spouse really matters as a model for them.
Wow. You know, so I'm just thinking, if you're feeling really stressed in your marriage or in your parenting, or there are things about yourself you can't quite understand, you have, you know, when we have certain knee-jerk responses, maybe what we need is not a vacation or a massage or a spa experience. Maybe what we need is some actual healing, because underneath that might be some trust issues that need to be looked at. There are some areas that we actually need to be healed in order to be able, like you say, to give and to receive trust, to be trustworthy and to be faithful, right? And that is a concern. I mean, you know, I don't know how often in church we actually speak about our brokenness enough that we are actually actively encouraging people to say, really look at the sources of your brokenness, really look at how you can receive healing from the Lord, how you could receive help from professionals like therapists and psychologists and counselors. Do you think the church should do more in this area in order to help adult Christians and parents, potential parents and parents, just be better at this high calling of being a parenting, raising the next generation, and doing it with more purpose and joy? Do you feel like, I mean, from your observations, that maybe the church has to do more in this regard?
I think you are right. The fact that the church doesn't have to feel limited. We certainly have a lot of resources. God has enabled us to discover a lot of things about ourselves. And so, yes, we can benefit from professional help and therapy, but there's also a lot of spiritual resources that we can engage in if we will do a very simple thing. And the simple thing is always the very hard thing to do, and that is because it requires humility. You know, scripture tells us to confess our sins one to another and to pray for each other. Wow. It couldn't be simpler than that. And husbands and wives can do this with each other, and parents and children can do this with each other. And we model humility, and we model the need to repent, and to say that, you know, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Can you please forgive me? It is just very, very simple words. You know, I remember I was working on a book, a parenting book for a certain publisher locally, and I talked to my dad about it, and I said, what are some things that you, from your own wisdom and all your years together, would put together? And he said, you know, there are five simple words. I'm sorry, I love you, thank you. And it's these simple statements that we can practice with each other, words of appreciation, words of confession, and just being able to note that, hey, you know, I'm a human being, and I need help, and I need your prayers. Being appreciative of each other, and and leaning on each other. And as you say, recognizing our own brokenness.
Wow, that's so good. It isn't really rocket science, isn't it?
No. And yeah. I think our pride really gets in the way. Our pride in the at every level, leadership level in the church, parents, even with children, you know, the pride gets in the way. That's why there's a lot of sibling rivalry as well, you know, because no one will give in. But we really need to help our children. And I think we can demonstrate that with the way we are with our own spouse as well. When we demonstrate openness and teachability and a lack of defensiveness.
Wow, that's great. That's a good tip for building a church culture and a spiritual family culture that can therefore be like a safe embrace for all the families within it. Have this ethos, right, of grace and humility. Not very easy, but it is very important.
It is very important because, and it is important for the faith of the children, because the child sees us as we truly are. They see us with our warts and our faults, and they see the hypocrisy if we are not ourselves practicing, you know, the confession. And so I think how we handle that ourselves is very important, because if we pretend that we are beyond sin, or we pretend that we are all good, the kid knows it. They see it. They see our inconsistency between husband and wife. They see that, you know, someone is not submitting to the other, or someone is exercising a lot of control over the other. And so we don't do a lot of justice, and we don't do a lot of good for the faith of the child if we don't demonstrate that we can say sorry, that we can ask for forgiveness.
Yeah. So parenting is not so much a checklist of things you need to do for your kid at every month or every stage. But while that's important, I think it fundamentally is about living life well, right, before God, and allowing our children to like be a test bed for our faith and our integrity and our values. One of the things that really inspired me and encouraged me is, interestingly, the whole idea that our children help us to grow. You know, because you know, sometimes as parents, we're so dead set that our children are like our project, right? And we want our project to succeed. Well, we didn't think that God gave us this brand new relationship as a dynamic to grow both of us. And what can come out of that, out of a place of prayerful dependence and faith and all that, is something greater than what we can possibly project or plan or design. I'm quite sure of it. God is definitely smarter than the sum of all of us.
Yeah, it is a very dynamic process, and we are all changing all the time. So that's what's so challenging, isn't it? No one ever masters it, you know. We just keep changing. The minute you think you got something right, the kid changes or you change, and then there's a lot of the adjustment again. So yeah, there's no really clear path or formula for everyone. There's no one size fits all. So and the reason for that is because I think God designed for us to be just, you know, people who are able to tune into each other and pay attention to each other as we listen to God. As we tune into God, then we have the capacity to love each other and to care for each other. Because really, where is that source of love going to come from? Everybody needs it. Everybody needs is looking for love. And where is it going to come from? We are very inadequate at loving ourselves. It's such an empty thing.
Wow. That's a really good place for us to wrap up the whole thought. I mean, parenting, of course, we always, in the more favorable circumstances, the child should be a fruit of love, right? And yeah, that's a great place to land, that we all need love, and we are poor at loving ourselves, and oftentimes poorer at loving our spouse and our kids. And so we really need to turn to the one source, that's God Himself, who has given us the good news that no matter where we've come from, and even if our own experiences have been far from helpful or healthy, there is hope as we lean in, as we trust God, as we choose the path of humility and grace. And because God says He gives grace to the humble. So that's so good. Yeah. Yeah. And everybody, Eliza has written a book called A Guide to Purposeful Parenting. I really encourage you to get the book. It's really good. Chock full of a lot more of this wisdom you are listening to. And yeah, Eliza, thank you so much for talking with us. And so before we go, Eliza, just some closing words from you. Maybe just about the joys and rewards of parenting in view of the falling fertility rate in Singapore and all developed nations. Yeah. For the Christian, why parent if people are all giving up on it?
Why parent? Is because God has said so in Genesis, to be fruitful and multiply and to subdue the earth. You know, really, the thing is, I never understood this as a college student when my professor said that that when you have children, it is a form of evangelism. And it really is. It is the way for propagating the faith. It's the way to pass the faith along. Think about this. If there is no next generation, how does the faith get passed on? Right? Other people reproduce, but if believers are not reproducing, how do we spread the faith? How do we pass the faith along? And so it's very important what we do in our families, what we do with our children. It really is about being faithful to the charge that God has given to us.
That's right. And one day we want to meet on that wonderful golden shore with all our kids in tow. Yours and mine together. Thank you again so much, Eliza, for this wonderful conversation.
Welcome.
God bless you and your lovely household.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.